The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. Deconstructing psyops, propaganda, and mainstream media BS. You're with Brian McClain on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, welcome to the Brian McClain Show. Thank you to Joe and Victoria and Steve Hook and Corinne for joining me in that past hour. Really, really stimulating conversation there. My goodness, so much going on right now. You know, I wanted to read something really quick because we talk a lot about, you know, are our politicians and policymakers and the war hawks out there on Capitol Hill, are they drinking their own Kool-Aid? Are they not taking information seriously? Do they only take information from the 972 million intelligence agencies or whatever ridiculous number that we don't need that we have? Well, I want to read you something. This is a tweet from Scott Ritter. And, you know, when Feinstein passed away, I did my best to be a good human about it. You know, I said, you know, rest in peace, God rest her soul. And but then, you know, I kind of switched to my political opinion about it. And, you know, I guess, understandably a little bit harsh about her voting record, if you will, her stance against the Constitution by wanting to disarm Americans. And, you know, then I boosted something on social media that upset one of my relatives. They said, oh, that's in poor taste. And I just want to throw this out there. This is something Scott Ritter wrote on his Twitter or his X.com. He says, I met Senator Dianne Feinstein once in the lead up to the 2003 invasion of Iraq. She had just recently been assigned the Senate Select Intelligence Committee in 2001. And it was in that capacity that she had a senior staffer from the committee ask me to come to Washington, D.C. to brief her on Iraqi WMDs and the allegations being made by the Bush administration that Iraq continued to possess them. We met in a secure conference room in the Capitol building, me, the senator, and half a dozen staffers and aides. It was a polite, professional affair, with the senator asking questions and taking notes. Eventually, she confronted me. She said, quote, your position is causing us some difficulty. You are making the U.S. look bad in the eyes of the world, end quote. I replied that my analysis and the underlying facts were rock solid. I'm going to interject here and say that he's referring to the fact that the analysis of his and many other journalists was that there was no credible WMD evidence. Back to what he's writing here. You know, he said, replied that my analysis and the underlying facts were rock solid, something she agreed with. I said that while I knew she couldn't reveal sensitive intelligence, if she could look me in the eye and say she has seen unequivocal proof that Iraq retained WMDs, I'd shut up and go away. She looked at her retinue and then me and said, quote, I have seen no such intelligence, end quote. She thanked me for the briefing and said it provided her with food for thought. On October 11th, 2002, Senator Feinstein voted in favor of the resolution authorizing war with Iraq. Later, she said she had been misled by the Bush administration and bad intelligence. I will forever know Senator Feinstein as someone who had been empowered by the truth and lacked the moral courage to act on it. The blood of thousands of Americans and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis stains her soul. I hope when she stands in judgment before her maker, she is punished accordingly. Now, what do you think of that? I'm curious. I think the fact that I reposted a funny video meme is not in poor taste. I think the fact that she voted in favor of the resolution authorizing a war with Iraq that led to 500,000 dead children is actually in poor taste. poor taste. And that's me keeping it light right there. Don't miss out on a thing. Be sure to download the TNT Radio app from either the Apple App Store or Google Play so you can easily listen live to us anywhere, anytime. It's available to download right now. It's what I use to listen to TNT Radio. And grab it, and it'll help keep you up to speed right here on TNT Radio.
Focused on the facts.
It's never biased.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, yes. So we're talking about this this motion to vacate rule. What's going to happen with it? Well, Senate leader, minority leader Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, obviously, has called on his fellow Republicans in the House of Representatives to abolish the rule that allows a single member to file a motion to vacate the chair, claiming it makes the speaker's job near impossible. So, and if you were listening in the previous hour, and I know you were, you heard Joe and Victoria talking about that as well. So we're going to be joined pretty soon here by my colleague Joe Hoft right here from TNT Radio and the Gateway Pundit. We're going to get his take on this and all the other crazy stuff going on. So in a press conference, McConnell began by expressing gratitude towards former Speaker Kevin McCarthy for his service. He said, quote, "I'd like to start by thanking Speaker McCarthy for his service. We had a great personal relationship trying to lead two very different parts of the American government. I think he has much to be proud of. We avoided a government shutdown. We did the inevitable with regard to the debt ceiling." So that's what McConnell had to say. But joining me now is the wonderful Joe Hoft of TNT Radio's Joe Hoft Show. Joe, it's great to see you. Welcome to the show. And what is your take on what has gone on? I've been talking about this pretty much ever since it dropped yesterday. It actually happened while we were live. I got to do the old breaking news thing, and it wasn't one of those, you know, 5 hour old versions of it. It was actually breaking while we were on air. But what's going on? What do you think's going on here?
I'm not sure. Hey, Brian, thanks for having me, by the way. It's great seeing you too.
Great to see you too.
Yeah, literally.
Absolutely. I can't wait till everybody can see us. It's going to be really nice. I'll just preview that real quickly here. We're getting lights and new microphones and headphones. It's going to be really, really slick when everybody's able to see us. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, me too. This is great. And thanks for having me. The I don't know. The thing that grabs me is well done. Well done to Matt Gaetz and others. And I'm, you know, and some of these guys like that, Representative Good, that guy has been a straight shooter from day one. Same with Gaetz. These guys are just, he's just laying it out. He's been on Bannon. I've seen him share there, the Representative Gaetz and others. These guys are strong. And that's what we need. We need leadership and strength right now. We need people that are going to stand up for what's right. And they've been boxed in by these rhinos, by the Uniparty, and prevented from, you know, from doing the right thing. And they continue to do it. And I love Matt Gaetz for this. And then he got hammered today or last night, I saw, by Newt Gingrich. And I like Newt Gingrich. I like him a lot. I like a lot of the stuff he's done over the years. He's been fantastic. But he's been wrong a couple of times. He was really wrong on this. You know, this was a heroic move by Matt Gaetz. It took more balls than the entire House. And by the way, I heard they, you know, they removed Pelosi from her office. I heard that was because she backstabbed McCarthy, that he was planning on her backing him up in case this happened, that they'd continue to keep him in. Probably gave her everything she ever wanted. And it's funny because it's her. It's not her. You know, they say Jeffries is in charge, but it still sounds like she's the one in charge. And boy, she a nasty piece of work. And it sounds like she backstabbed him. And that says all you need to know about McCarthy. The guy's a fool. Anybody that would trust that lady is a fool. She's a monster. She is just a monster. Her and her hammer carrying husband, Paul, they're monsters. And
Joe DeGeneva called her a thug, a political thug. I thought that was a pretty accurate descriptor for the way that she behaves. And I looked at the article up at the wonderful Gateway Pundit, which I use daily. Thank you to you and your brother and everybody that does that amazing piece of work over there. You guys are all just blow my mind with how much content you can keep coming and the great analyses and everything. I mean, I don't know what we would do without you guys. But I was looking at some of the footage and the write-up on that, the photos, and I was just like, oh, man, I so wish that we could, like, have the other 190, I'm not even sure how many Republicans willing to go to, you know, go to bat, you know, at, like this, shut things down, stop things, kick people out. You know, just imagine if we had more than eight people willing to get out there like that.
Hey, Matt. Hey, Matt. Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's interesting. I love Joe DiGenova, by the way. I think he's been a real hero over the years for a long, long time.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I just love them. And yeah, Pelosi, I think she's demonic. I remember when I was in Hong Kong telling one of my daughters years ago, well, the only thing keeping her alive is the demons within her. And it's not one demon, it's a pack. And she is something else, man. And to think that she's still running the show and the destruction of America while this woman's been a speaker, the massive debt now that we have. And that's the thing with McCarthy, this massive debt. They're not addressing the border. They're just that the country we've got. I talked to a couple people here. We've got Chinese crossing that border today. I had retired Colonel John Mills on the show. Got Chinese of military age crossing the border. And he says, I very much believe they're some sort of special forces or something like that. He can tell by the way they move, it looks like they're military. And they're coming into our border right now. This is what Biden's doing. This is the biggest concern about the border. It's not, for years we've been saying, oh, it's about the election. And maybe it has been for some time. But more recently under Biden and Obama, it has been this Trojan horse that's coming in. These people are here, and I had Gordon Chang on the show, and he said the same thing. These people, they could turn this country upside down. They could start assassinating people, blowing things up, poisoning water. The list goes on and on. Blowing up nuclear plants, whatever. An army could. We're not prepared for this. And if we happen to go to war with China at the same time, this could be an absolute nightmare. Is that what's going on? I don't know. Is that why they're doing this? It doesn't make sense.
That's what I think. I you know, there's a lot of talk about turning areas purple, turning areas blue. We're well beyond that. They don't need 5-10 million people to turn an area blue or purple. They just do that through lawfare and fraud, you know, as you guys have documented.
Right.
So, I mean, that to me is off the table. This is about chaos and war and, you know, what could lead to a lot of controlled problems that, you know, they will have solutions for. And I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, Steve Hook, our colleague, was talking with Frank Gaffney today. Frank Gaffney has a similar take on it. You know, I've spoken with Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Art Del Cueto, Jason Jones, you know, so many people about this. And the national security aspect, to include just the health of our people, over 100,000 people been poisoned by deadly fentanyl and, you know, enough floating around the country to kill everybody else if it were, you know, magically dispersed properly. I'm not suggesting that that's a thing, but the fact that 100,000 people have died and that we have military age males coming here from China, from 162 different countries, it's like, And then here's the big thing that really gets me, Joe. It's like this is being orchestrated from the White House, from from DHS. So, you know, DHS is what was created to protect the United States, right, ostensibly, and they're the ones that have completely opened it up to the very terroristic threats that they founded that organization on with our tax dollars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And think of the DHS also houses the CISA, this entity that they set up to protect us through the internet, through the systems, et cetera. And that same entity, yesterday, it was announced in this court case with Missouri and Louisiana against the government, which has Gateway Pundit as one of the lead plaintiffs. The CISA was added to the list of government agencies that need to stop censoring conservatives. And that happened yesterday as Biden's team's trying to fight it, trying to say, hey, we want to censor conservatives, let us. And they're probably still doing it. And yet the government says no, and they actually, instead of just no, they're saying we're going to add CISA to that. But that's part of the homeland security. This is how they secure the homeland. They target conservatives. They target good Americans. They target us, you and me, the guys that stand for truth in this country. We just want to know the truth, and we don't want any of these crazy, and once we know the truth, then we want to be able to make decisions with it. Like, hey, we don't want to spend an extra $2 trillion every year. How about we cut back on that and start paying our own bills? Because I'm hearing now we're like $700 billion a year in interest now. It's going to be $1 billion pretty soon. $1 billion in interest payments, probably more than that, as a matter of fact. And the rates are going up. And because of that, this is a snowball going down the hill. It is. Unbelievably, what they've got going between economically destroying this country and now bringing these people in from other countries here. This is a case study in how to absolutely destroy a country in a matter of years. And think about what they're doing also with like these DAs, these secretaries of states with the elections, the DAs with the with law and order, what they're doing to President Trump, which is unbelievable. Every one of these cases is so bogus. It's unbelievable. They're manufacturing crimes. They're combining civil cases with criminal cases. They're disregarding statutes of limitations. They're combining all sorts of crazy things, federal statutes with state statutes to try to get Trump on a felony, like with that one case with Brake. None of this stuff makes sense. It's all, you know, total bogus. And the American people are sitting back saying, what the hell is going on? And then you got people in the House that are upset because we say, we don't want any more Kevin McCarthy. We certainly don't want any more Nancy Pelosi. We want people of integrity in there. They're going to start dealing with the mess this country's in. The Democrats are sold out. They're done. We've got to find strong conservatives, not uniparty members, but conservatives that are going to stand in there and do the thing. And as you know, McConnell and half of that Republican the GOP in the Senate is a mess. Only something like 20 recently voted for a key vote for the American people. This is very, very dangerous and damaging. These people are not for the American. We've got to fix this stuff. It's really scary. You start getting me going, Brian. It's like, man, we are at 95% or more on just absolute insanity right now.
I'm with you, Joe. I wind myself up. I get wound up when I listen to your show, which, by the way, is at 11 a.m. Eastern right here on Today's News Talk, TNT Radio. I got to let you go. I got Major Glenn Ignazio coming in. It's going to be a great talk. Everybody be sure. I know you already are, but if you're not, make sure you're listening to the Joe Hoff Show right here on TNT. Thanks, Joe Hoff, for joining me here on the Brian McClain Show at TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Lynn Shaw.
Our big reminder that September is National Suicide Prevention Month. I gave a workshop yesterday, a Warriors workshop, to healthcare providers here in New York City, 47 of them. You think they would know a little bit about human trafficking, sexual exploitation, the landscape, again, healthcare providers. And shockingly, and this is not judging them, it's not their fault because they're not being given the information. Again, I say healthcare. People in the healthcare field, they did not know. They were shocked. They were shocked at what I was sharing with them. So we have to at all times work on getting the truth out there, the facts, and then what are we going to do about it? Because suicide is a very serious public health issue in the United States and escalating among our young. And that is the most shocking fact. When I'm presented with stories of 5-year-olds killing themselves and I ask, how are they doing this? Where are they learning this?
Lynn Shaw on TNT Radio.
Affordable housing. We can build that. Sustainable housing. We can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
The conversation continues.
I don't believe it, and I think that's a terrible position that I am in, that I don't trust my government.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Have you noticed there are more and more AI tools, apps, and little helpers and things being unleashed into our cyberspace every day? Just yesterday, I'm cruising in the car, and all of a sudden, Spotify comes up and says, hey, I'm an AI. I'm going to make sure you hear all the songs that you want. Did this whole introduction routine, and it was like, throw this thing out the window. What's happening right now? It's just coming faster than we can make sense of it in so many ways. And it's I'm reading about this today, getting ready for this next amazing interview here. And it's come to my attention that the Pentagon is spending millions on a language for mesh networked drones and drone swarms powered by AI algorithms. Hey, what could go wrong? Just what the doctor ordered, machines that speak yet another language the average person can hardly comprehend. And then there's the potential for deepfake tech, fully realized almost. And that's for us, for you and I to play with. Just imagine what DARPA and DOD are working with in that swim lane there. It's a massive topic, and I believe that it's a paradigm shift that is inevitable. It's, I don't know if I should say it's being forced on us, but it's at least very inevitable. And it's going to move forward and very quickly. So here to discuss this important shift in our cyber reality is retired Special Ops Air Force Commander and expert in defense intelligence technology, Major Glenn Ignazio. Major, welcome. And to kick us off, what do you make of the Pentagon pushing the limits of automation, including with AI languages for command and control on drones and drone swarms? I mean, swarms. I mean, you're a pilot. I mean, how does that make you? How do you parse this?
Yeah. First of all, thanks for having me back on. I mean, I know we've discussed before, and you've probably heard me say, is, you know, for every pro, there's a con to it, and everything that's done good, there's also things that are done evil for it as well. I mean, I think from the decision making process, so the idea of, you know, looking at intelligence and trying to make the best decisions and everything. I mean, AI is awesome. It really makes those things happen. And like it or not, we use a term called a kill chain, right? I mean, it's like when you're trying to go against an adversary, if you're able to move and decide and act quicker than them, that's great. But let's take a look at the problem, which is what you're tying into. And I completely agree, is when you take the human completely out of the loop. So having the information and being able to give it to a person to make a decision quickly, yeah, that's great. I think the dangerous part is when we start having AI make the decisions for you. That's where we start losing control and we start losing that human factor. I think that's one of the biggest things that really concerns me, if that makes sense. You know, it's a concern.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, so I'm a little bit familiar with that process. I understand. I don't know if it's still this way, but when I was more engaged with that, they had a position called a JTAC, a Joint Tactical Air Controller. And that was usually a person on the ground. Like you said, you've got eyes on something so that, you know, if inbound aerial munition has to be put on it, it's like, okay, maybe it's in a suburb. You don't want to go right to left. If all the houses are going right to left, you're going to want to go, you know, the other direction. I mean, maybe parallel perpendicular would be a better description there. But how does that work? Like, what kind of changes need to happen in military rules of engagements to allow for the human to be taken out of the loop? Because I remember when the JTACs came along, it was the whole point was that there was a human in the loop to help, you know, reduce collateral damage.
You're absolutely right. And so I think it'll be definitely... it'll be interesting to figure out what silo, I want to say silo, but what category it's going to get into. For example, exactly to your point, I mean, one of the reasons why so many things were tailored to where, you know, special operations forces had to have eyes on the target is exactly what you just explained, so that, you know, we're not hitting the wrong target and we're reducing collateral. And unfortunately, that was learned by big mistakes. You know, that's important. I think it would be one of those things of, if you take a look at it, say, from air to air combat, right? You have another aircraft flying against you. You know that it's an adversary, or, you know, a bandit, as you would call it. And I think that the ability for AI to make the decision as quickly as possible of how to engage and destroy that particular adversary, that's something that I think is a better play. For example, I mean, it takes you probably 10 years to become a master person flying air-to-air combat. And to be able to have AI learn this and learn this and learn this in a matter of moments and be able to apply that to a fighter, you know, that's interesting. I mean, they've actually done this with aircraft and with simulators and pilots, and they let the AI decide it. And the AI also has a thing that they don't have to worry about is self-preservation. You know, if you're a fighter pilot, you're going to make a decision that's going to take an adversary out, but you're also thinking about your own survival. Imagine you had a fighter aircraft going against another, you know, maybe manned aircraft using artificial intelligence. It's going to take the most quickest effective way to take that adversary out without thinking if they're going head to head and how close or how dangerous it is. I think that accelerates things, and that would be reasonable when you have an adversary that's greatly defined like that. But the air to ground thing, I completely get with you. That's something that I think we're very far removed and dangerous to go to, if that makes sense, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it completely makes sense to me. You know, it's like I always thought when I learned about the JTAC program, I thought, you know, this is good. This is, you know, the United States military, like you said, improving based on lessons learned. And in many cases, you know, hard lessons learned, lethal lessons learned, these, you know, sort of losses that we've experienced that lead to, you know, I considered the JTAC being in the loop and an innovation or an improvement on the human in the loop and, you know, right. That kind of thing. I was, I worked on that program for a little while, and I was proud to work on that program because I thought, you know, this is really good. And I you know, I worked with a lot of intellectuals and analysts I was a civilian worker on it, but, you know, to see the care that they put into it and the kind of think fusion is a bad word these days, but I'll go ahead and use it there because it seemed to work really well. You know, the communications, everything was like a well-oiled machine. And I thought, you know, this is good work right here. But here we are, you know, flash 8 years later, 9 years later, and you know, now I'm interested in the AI factor coming into it. It's really interesting. So I have a headline I have to get to, but I'll drop a question in your pocket before we go to headline here. And that will be, is there a mesh or a combination where you still could have, using your air-to-air combat example, is there any chance that there will be AI included in manned conflicts, and would that be beneficial or not? Right after this headline here with TNT Radio.
What a news day this is turning out to be.
Wait till you hear this.
Now, TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. London police raided the home of Reclaim Party leader Lawrence Fox on Wednesday morning in the wake of comments made about members of the public destroying Mayor Sadiq Khan's Green Agenda spy cameras. Rishi Sunak is gearing up for turbulence during his speech today as Conservative Mayor Andy Street is threatening to resign over HS2. The mayor of the West Midlands is understood to be preparing to resign immediately after Sunak's speech.
God, you're amazing. You're a much better listener than my wife. You're always there for me. I think I may be in love.
Where is she?
It's not what it seems. I was talking to...
Who's the tramp I heard you talking to?
That was my Alexa, sweetie.
Well, she sounds like a tramp.
Fall in love with news and talk all over again with your smart device. Just tell it to play.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Glenn, what do you think about that? Like, I understand that, and this may be a Hollywood understanding, but I think that what I've heard is that in some of the very advanced fighters that we have, and even helicopters like H-64 Apaches and such, there is some level of automation in there for your targeting officer and your munitions officers. I'm not sure what their official titles are, but is that where does that go with AI put into the mix?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. And, you know, I think from, you know, everything needs to happen in a step, and it has to be very logical. Is, you know, the thing about AI is that it helps the decision happen quicker, right? I mean, you know, like when you're talking about the JTAC, and first of all, love those guys. A lot of close friends are in that community, and I can relate very closely. But if you could help a JTAC, or you can help, you know, a person in an aircraft be able to analyze the threat environment, determine who the adversary or where the adversary is, who and where friendlies are as well, to make the best decision as quickly as possible, the better. You know, the carbon-based computer in the brain bucket is a little bit slower than some of the AI, and I think that's very advantageous. You know, but back to the fighter thing is, you know, there's a smart wingman program that is out. And what it is it's a drone that is literally flying in formation with a manned aircraft. And this drone is literally AI powered. And it's designed, I believe it's designed very well with the F-35. I have a couple of friends flying that. And the idea is that it will fly formation with you. It will go and engage targets, or it will provide a defensive, basically a defensive capability for you while you're flying air to air. So imagine one manned aviator in the cockpit, and you have three other aircraft that are artificial intelligence flying. You're able to provide them direction and to take action on things. You know, that's the evolution, and it still has a human in the loop, which I think is the critical sort of emergency stop button if things go wrong. But that is happening right now. And I think it's called the Valkyrie program. I keep on bringing it up. I better check on this. But it is flying, and it is being worked right now. So it is it's not just a concept in Hollywood or on somebody's mind. It is actually happening.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I got to say, that sounds pretty cool, first of all.
Yeah.
I'm curious, does the pilot have any control over them? I mean, he's obviously doing a very important job of his own with his, you know, multi-million-dollar machine. Who's flying the wings there?
So that's the interesting part, and I think that's also gets in some of the sensitivity, probably, because every time I talk to somebody about it, they get a little delicate about it. But the thing is that this aviator that is flying this aircraft, this pilot, is basically managing these wingmen. You know, it's almost like, you know, the way it is in the Air Force is that you have a wingman, your second wingman tells you and acknowledges your orders, and that's pretty much it. You know, they're there to protect you and watch out for you and be your secondary. And it's the same type of aspect with these smart wingmen. Now, how they're communicated, if that's electronically, or who knows, maybe it recognizes your voice just like a manned aircraft. I don't know those details. But yes, that aviator right there is the one that is managing those wingmen. It's not remote control where somebody else is in the background, you know, flying it miles away. It is actually the aviator. And the F-35 is a super smart aircraft that they've designed this around.
Yeah. Interesting. And this is a tangential. I'm just curious, how is the F-35 program going these days? It's notorious for being over budget, late, clunky problems. Has it gotten better?
Yeah, I mean, I would say yes. So I'm a proponent for F-35. I think what happens is you get into the corporate politics in general that always damages aircraft. But like, for example, Pratt & Whitney makes the engine for it. Have friends back there in Connecticut. Phenomenal. I mean, it's the most powerful engine. In fact, it's being used on the B-21 Raider, the new stealth bomber. The aircraft itself is pretty impressive. But like, for example, Lockheed's being very sticky about their maintenance manuals and information, so the Air Force can't get everything that they need. You know, those are ridiculous things about it. But my friends that fly the F-35 love it. They said, you know, you get into this thing and it's like you flick a switch, it's got some, you know, touch control panels on it, and you're pretty much, you're flying. So you're focusing so much on being able to do your mission, and it is all visual, and it's so much easier. It's like the video game generation that knows how to fly this versus the old Top Gun generation of stick and throttle kind of type, you know?
All right. Well, that's good to hear. I had a feeling that when Tom Cruise came out with that Top Gun sequel, that was sort of the benchmark or the bookend on an epoch of aviating history right there. They kind of intimated that in the movie a little bit too, but that's really
I like the movie. I love the video of it, but the mission I think I'd do a little bit differently, but that's my side tension to you as well.
All right, well, we'll get together on the side. I'd love to hear your war game plans for that one. In the last couple minutes here, I probably don't have time to get too deep into this one because I do gotta let you go in a minute or so here, but I flagged up this article. It's brand new. I think it came out today. I'm pretty sure it came out today on Forbes. And here's the headline: Do you speak droidish? The Pentagon is spending millions on a language for drones. And I got to say, first off, it's weird to use a takeoff from Spaceballs. If you recall, Barf asking the princess if she was Druish, But anyways, sci-fi nerds are always fun. But this is about creating a new language to control, use AI to control drone swarms. Any thoughts on this technology? And we'll dive deep into this one next time we get on.
Sure. I'll give you a quick, you know, I mean, the important part is like anything that AI is listening and learning everything you say and also anticipating what you're going to ask next. That's how it starts accelerating. It starts learning. The idea that they're creating their own language about it sort of gives them the ability to actually learn quicker and to be able to talk among like personnel. It's not like, you know, you and I have different languages, different words. This would be something consistent. Maybe it's even better. Maybe it's even more secure. So, I mean, those are some of the things that I would think of. But, you know, I hope they're going about this the right way. And this may be actually a very interesting advantage for it.
Oh, yeah. This sounds like the kind of thing that could change military history and, you know, tacticians, techniques and procedures, you know, all this stuff. So, yeah, we'll have to reconvene on this one because I'm really interested in the technology. And I know they apply it to nanotechnology, too. And that's where things start to get really interesting. But, hey, it's been great to have you, Major Glenn Ignacio, right here on the Brian McClain Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Give me a minute with TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
In case you're wondering who won the second Republican presidential debate last Wednesday night at the Reagan Library, it was the man who was not there, former President Donald Trump. According to Morning Consult, Trump, who skipped the first debate as well, saw his support among GOP voters rise by 5 points from before the event. It's now 63%. Ramaswamy, who was frequently attacked during the debate, dropped 2 points from 9% to 7%. Nikki Haley also lost 2%. She's at 5%, along with Mike Pence, who dropped a point after the debate. Tim Scott held steady at 2%. Now, are you ready for this? Self-appointed Trump basher, wannabe tough guy, and phony conservative Chris Christie gained 50%. Yes, watch out. The man some now call Porky Pig climbed from 2% to 3%. He must be so proud. And I skipped over Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who's in second place. He went from 15% down to 12. A 51% lead for Donald Trump. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The trusted news initiative, TNI, is described as a means for news organizations to rebuild trust and tackle the next disinformation challenges. The BBC's Trusted News Initiative is a partnership that includes First Draft, Google, YouTube, Twitter, Reuters, Meta, The Washington Post, Microsoft, Associated Press, Agence France-Presse, Financial Times, EBU, and Nation Media Group. The BBC website states it is the only forum in the world of its kind designed to take on disinformation in real time. 2 weeks after the World Health Organization announced the COVID-19 pandemic, on March the 11th, 2020, Canada's CBC reported that TNI had announced plans to tackle harmful coronavirus disinformation. Censoring organizations refer to the WHO, CDC, FDA, and NIH policies to justify their censorship. Other subjects of suppression by TNI now include the Russia-Ukraine conflict, climate change, elections and democracy, and many others.
You're with Brian McClain on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We're told that wind and solar farms are the only ethical and ecological way of powering our nation now, and we must transition to them. We're told that to not rely on those would be the end of life on Earth. And that's a pretty mean thing to tell to kids, in my estimation. We're also told that the science is settled and agreed upon. And we're told that CO2 will ruin our weather patterns. But we're not told that wind and solar farms cannot power our nation. We're not told that the scientific method does not agree with the claims of the man-made climate change talking points and policies. And we're not told that the establishment of electronic vehicles, wind and solar farms, does not work and that it causes verifiable ecological damage and human rights abuses. We're also not told that these policies will bring extreme austerity to us as citizens, economic doom, And we're not told that actual environmentalists are banding together this weekend to protest this inhumane paradigm based in lies. And here to discuss with us is CFACT President Craig Rucker. Craig, tell us about the Uniting the World Against Offshore Wind event happening in Cape May on this Sunday, October 8th at 5 p.m.
Yeah, certainly, Brian, and thanks for having me on your program. Yeah, we at CFACT have been working on efforts to try to educate the public about the fact that much of what they're being told about green energy is frankly wrong. Green energy is not green. And in fact, its impacts on marine mammals off the coast of the eastern coast of the United States is something that's been of great concern to a lot of people. The Biden administration has plans to put in about 30 gigawatts of offshore wind between now and the year 2030. They began sonar blasting, mapping the seafloor since 2016. And we've seen a precipitous rise in the number of whales that have washed up dead on the shores. Some say about a 400% increase in whale deaths, which has led many communities to start calling for a moratorium to see if, in fact, these things are, in fact, you know, the impacting the marine mammals, not just whales, but also dolphins and other animals that use sonar to navigate. The Biden administration has steadfastly refused to do so. 50 mayors of towns in New Jersey have asked for a moratorium. We're getting together with a bunch of citizen outreach activists in Cape May, New Jersey this Sunday to do kind of a candlelight vigil on the beach, commemorating and in solidarity with others who are up and down the East Coast as well as overseas, concerned about the impacts of so-called green energy or offshore wind energy and how it's harming marine life.
I've spoken, my colleague Lynn and I have spoken with Kristen Rickey from Save Our Tales. I think it's .org, if not .com. And we've learned a little bit about this. And I mean, that really blows me away, number one, that you know, as a kid of the 90s, it blows me away that Save the Whales is no longer a thing. You know, we were going to save the whales, guys. But no, apparently we're going to save the planet by killing the whales with some sort of energy technology that's really not going to be able to compete with our traditional energy paradigms. And last time we spoke with Kristen, she was pointing out that there's even, I don't know if it's legislation or if it's policy or what to frame it as, but these companies are being given an allotment, an allowed amount of marine life death that exceeds the actual amount of animals in some cases. I mean, is this really happening? Like, how bad has it gotten for the sea life out there?
Yeah, what she was obviously talking about is something called the incidental harassment authorizations. These are given by the government, specifically EPA and the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management. They allow, during the construction, the harassing of and even taking of some of the whales. If you were to add up all the different wind farm authorizations and how much they're to harass, it would actually be about 700 whales that they are allowed to incidentally harm and kill, but potentially. There's only 350 right whales. They're named right whales, not because of their political affiliation, but back in the whaling days, if you were a whaler, they were the perfect whale to take, I guess, in terms of blubber and whale oil and things of that sort. But anyway, there's 350 of them left. And the amount of incidental harassment authorizations exceeds the number of them that exist in the wild. So, you know, this is something that would never be allowed if it were an oil rig going offshore or any other sign of energy. But because it's green energy and they feel the planet's imperiled from a global warming crisis that, in our opinion, is way overhyped if it exists at all. They just had a Nobel Prize guy named Clauser, who just won the Nobel Prize in physics, actually came out and said there is no climate crisis, and we would be in agreement with that. So all to fend off a crisis that, in our opinion, doesn't even exist.
Yeah, I've been following that story, and it's just amazing to me, you know, that as someone who is a scientist, someone who is, you know, decorated, someone who understands the scientific method, you know, never mind this, the science. This is one of my least favorite terms of the last 5 years, is caps lock, quote unquote, TM, the science. When they say the science is settled, this kind of stuff, it's like, how dumb do you have to be? The science is never settled if you're using the scientific method. You know, you can maybe come close to settling it, but it's always up for debate and repetition, you know, repeating. And
except for climate and COVID. Yeah, right. Climate and COVID, you're not allowed to question the scientists. And it's self-evidently not true. Much of what they've said on both fronts, really, have been factually borne out to be wrong, whether it's, you know, the virus didn't come from a lab in Wuhan. It obviously came from a wet market. I mean, we now know our own CIA admits that's wrong, but you would have been banned on Facebook or any of the social media outlets for saying otherwise. Well, similarly, we have predictions on climate crises that go back to Al Gore, early 2000s, saying that Hurricane Katrina's would happen every year. They never happened. Prince Charles, now King Charles, making a prediction we had like 52 months left before the end of the world. Greta Thunberg in 2018 saying that we have 5 years left on Twitter. Now she took that tweet down. And we have AOC famously saying in 2018, the end of the world will happen by 2030. I mean, all these things should have put a dent in the credibility of those saying that the end is near, but they don't seem to. And I think people are well misinformed that we're not experiencing increased severe weather threats on either hurricanes, flooding, wildfires, cats and dogs living together. None of this stuff is increasing at apocalyptic levels that anything match what the United Nations, IPCC, or others are saying about climate change.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man could walk down the street right now, and I'm still not going to believe what they're saying there. So is there...
just don't cross the streams.
Yes, exactly. We'll be careful not to cross the streams for sure. Is there a is there a schism in the, in the green market, in the pro earth market, in the ecology market? Because I really feel like electric vehicles, they use slaves to make the batteries. They're toxic batteries. There's nowhere to put them when they die. The blades on the wind farms, those die. They're not usable after like 8 years. We have nowhere to put those. Those don't degrade. We're killing animals in the ocean, and we're being told that this is a green thing to do. This is a pro earth thing to do. And it seems like everybody bought into this for the longest time. But I mean, is it just because people are being, their voices are being silenced? Is there, which side is larger, do you think?
Well, I'll be candid with you. I think there's a schism on their side, kind of like you have on the right, between those who are, you know, saw it with the McCarthy thing, the kind of a MAGA grassroots thing versus an establishment. On their side, you're seeing the same thing. I saw a schism. There's a movie by, of all people, Michael Moore, who hasn't said anything I agree with since he started producing films. However, he put something out called Planet of the Humans, where he addressed this question that green energy is not green, and exposed it for what it was, and did a magnificent job of doing that. I think his concerns about climate were overblown, but it was on our side. We've noticed in the Save the Whales effort against offshore wind, I'll be actually speaking to a group of 50% liberals on the beach who are starting to re-examine some of these claims of green energy for the reasons you just mentioned, Brian. They're seeing that the cobalt is being mined in Africa by child labor, a lot of Chinese companies, given $2 a day to get it out in horrid conditions. They know Uyghur labor, slave labor, is being used in China to produce this stuff. They see that wind and solar energy are given passes on killing eagles, bald eagles, golden eagles, whales, and they're asking questions. And I think they're starting to see the light a little bit, and it's our hope that that will continue.
Mine too. You know, I was really excited when I was doing my research for this conversation. I was like, this is exactly the kind of thing we need. You know, I'm really pleased that this is happening. And with regards to the event that you're going to be speaking at, this is something that's if I'm correct, started in Norway and has now become an international event. Can you talk about the scale of it?
Yeah, it's going to be international. It was a Norwegian group that is concerned also about the impacts of offshore wind on whales, and there'll be communities around the world kind of in solidarity with them. In our particular case, we're thinking of doing some little stunt of maybe lighting up a whale tail and standing around it with candles and taking a picture of it from the air. But there'll be events like that around the world that will showcase kind of a solidarity of people. And as I said, they're left and right. You got people like Chris Smith, a Republican, standing with, people who are on the left on this issue. So it really is a drive, I think, by the kind of elitist, corporate elitist, those types of people who are pushing ESG. And you're talking about the people from BlackRock and Vanguard and many of these big shore offshore wind people that are all part of the World Economic Forum and that are really pushing and driving this thing at to make money off it, and it does nothing to save the climate.
Money and power seem to be what they're going after now. With our last 3 or 4 minutes here, I'm also want to address your article. A new study zaps Biden's plan to transform the electrical grid, because you touch on some things in the article here, which can be found at The Hill, by the way. You touch on some things in the article there, and you just touched on it also with, the globalism push, the Davos crowd, if you will. I've been saying for a long time, we can't do their plan and still be America, first of all. And furthermore, we can't do their plan, or, AOC's Green New Deal, if you prefer, however you want to, frame it. We can't do that plan and not experience great austerity and economic loss. And I think what you're pointing out in your article here kind of underlines that. Can you give us an overhead?
Oh, yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I've been attending UN summits on climate change since the 1990s. You said you're from the 1990s. I'm a 70s kid, but I've been attending them. And I can tell you right off the bat that the influence of the kind of powerful elitists that go there in private jets are the same ones that often attend these Davos summits and others. They have in mind, I wouldn't even call it, some say it's a left wing or communist. I actually think it's feudalistic, where they're the ones that are the kings and nobles, and the rest of the peasants can kind of do their bidding. And you see this, on display in places like the Congo. Great book, Cobalt Red. I recommend everybody read it. It's actually written by somebody on the left that details the horrific conditions. And they're being covered up by the Davos crowd. They give them certifications that they get that are baloney, saying that we're not using child slave labor. We get a good ESG score and all this sort of thing, when it's all nonsense. And we see the same with the carbon credits. There was just a report out saying that all these things that they're doing, so to, they'll say, I'm taking my private jet because I have a carbon offset. They're all baloney. And this is even admitted by left-wing sources. So, it's all a big scam. And our hope is that people start seeing it. They can certainly come to our website, cfact.org or climatedepot.com, and see these facts. We put out data that's coming a lot from government sources. So even their own data refutes a lot of their assertions that we're headed towards some sort of climate apocalypse.
I think that's where the propaganda, the emperor wears no clothes. The propaganda is just in your face at that point, when they're openly contradicting with the narrative their own set of facts, which are already doctored to favor that mindset. I think people are starting to see it. And with regards to the austerity that we might experience should they, turn off coal fire plants and continue, making it difficult to use traditional means, in the last minute or so here, what do you think, what's at risk if these policies continue and movements?
Well, you'll go nowhere and be happy. The French right now are talking about 4 flights per lifetime. They are talking about what type of meat you will eat, having the government set your thermostat, having government bureaucrat telling you what to do with your own private property. what cars you will drive. In fact, they don't even want you driving cars. Your entire lifestyle will be upset if they move. And they're already talking about, by the way, climate lockdowns similar to COVID lockdowns, saying that we have a climate emergency. So I think nothing less than our very freedoms are at stake. And it's incumbent on all of us to get informed and get involved and fight back.
Absolutely. Uniting the world against offshore wind on the evening of October 8th. Okay. It's going to be, this is a big one. I hope you're checking it out. I hope you're getting involved. I hope you're going to climate conferences and all this stuff. CFACT, is it CFACT? It's ORG, right?
Yeah, it's CFACT.org. CFACT.org.
Absolutely. And that is the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Craig Rucker, thank you for joining me here on the Brian McClain Show on today's News Talk. And everybody stay tuned for the Misty Winston Show coming up next right here on TNT Radio.